Chapter 61. It was a very mundane hike, despite that bizarre psychedelic flag of a sky up above. They walked up from the beach and through a bank of dunes. Maggie led the way, striding boldly. Lobsang followed, the lenses and other sensors on his pack whirring and swiveling. Joshua was happy to play rear gunner and stay at the back of the group, pivoting on the damn cane, not wanting to hold anybody up. Indra Newton, however, walked beside him, and Joshua was aware that she was keeping an eye on him. It irritated him that anybody should think he needed watching over, but on the other hand, he was kind of touched. He wouldn't have expected that kind of thoughtfulness of a super-brain next like Indra. Well, people always surprised you. The hike across the sand was hard work, though. He kept thinking of that desperate scramble across another beach on the world of the Yggdrasil trees. The going got a little easier for him once they'd climbed out of the soft, dry sand at the top of the beach, and the ground became firmer. Joshua saw that the sand here was bound by a kind of moss that looked vaguely green, although Joshua didn't trust his colour sense under this peculiar sky. And then he nearly stumbled when his cane broke through a kind of crust and sank into the earth. Indra grabbed his arm to steady him. He found himself looking down into a broken open nest, littered with clumps of moss, from which an animal and its young all stared back up at him. He was reminded of the rabbit mole nests he'd learned to crack with Sancho, but this animal was nothing like a rabbit mole. The beast might have been a couple of feet across, and it had six stubby, almost triangular limbs folding out from a central core. It was something like a big starfish covered in electric blue fur. But in that central section was a mouth, and three very human-looking eyes peered up at him. Around it were three, four, five smaller copies, wriggling starfish the size of coins. He caught all this in a glance. Big Mama opened that small mouth and hissed at him. The little one squealed and clambered over her, and she lifted her limbs and gathered herself into a ball of fur, enclosing the young. Then she rolled out of the broken warren and shot out of sight over the curve of a dune, moving with remarkable speed. Maggie said dryly, "I see you're making friends, Joshua. At least nobody's killed anybody else yet." Indra said as they walked on, "Life, then. But there doesn't seem to be very much life here. There's nothing like grass on these dunes." She glanced inland to bare eroded hills. "I see nothing like trees, though that appears to be a universal biological form. No animal life, save Mr. Valiente's starfish. Even the ocean seemed relatively lifeless, save for the traversers, of course." "You're almost right," Lobsang said. "Actually, there is more animal life. In the far distance, my enhanced vision reveals it, but it may not be apparent to you. There are more starfish, big ones, browsing on the flank of that hill." Joshua peered where he pointed, but could see only massive shadows moving in the purplish light.
"Starfish world, then," he murmured.
Lobsang said, "I think this planet may have been through a mass extinction relatively recently, a nearby supernova probably. Hence the sparseness of life, the apparent dominance by one animal group. The starfish may have been chance survivors, perhaps saved by their evident habit of burrowing underground. Something similar happened on Datum Earth after a massive dieback a quarter of a billion years ago. In the strata laid down in the period after, nothing but the bones of animals the biologists called Lystrosaurus, like ugly pigs." Maggie scoffed.
"As every science officer I ever flew with would have remarked, that's a hell of a lot of supposition on very little fact, mister."
"True enough. But lacking any better evidence, one must assume that the place one visits is typical of the world as a whole." "But if you're right," Indra said, "then we haven't arrived at a typical epoch in time. Not if we've arrived just after a mass extinction. Not unless..." Lobsang smiled. "Go ahead.
make the deduction? Not unless mass extinctions are commonplace here, so that this is a typical time. Good. I believe that's true. Come, let's walk on.
He led the way now, plodding further inland towards the more distant hills.
We may be near the inner edge of the Sagittarius Arm, which is one of the galaxy's major star-making factories, a very active place, quite unlike the placid local arm through which our sun drifts. Well, as you can see for yourself in the sky.
Ah, Indra said. And so, lots of nearby supernovas.
This is almost as deadly a place as the galaxy center. Periodically, this world must get a drenching of radiation and high-energy particles.
Joshua grunted. Then we needn't expect to find relics of intelligent life here.
Not so, Indra said. The world must be long, or we wouldn't have been led here. And a world cannot be long without local sapients.
Quite right, Lobsang said. Joshua, in the course of the galaxy's history, there has been a great wave of star-making washing out from the center. So the closer you get to the center, the older the worlds and the suns are. I'd estimate this world is 1 billion years older than Earth. And on such an ancient world, complex life and mind may have risen up over and over, despite the drumbeats of mass extinctions. Civilizations here are like children growing up in a minefield, and yet, evidently, some of them do grow and flourish and achieve great things. Otherwise, we would not be here at all. The Skein could not exist.
Joshua frowned. What great things have they achieved, Lobsang? I don't see any sign of intelligence here at all.
It may be hard to recognize. Maybe even the starfish creatures were engineered to acquire their subterranean habits, so that if the worst comes to the worst, they at least will survive.
Maggie shook her head. More irresponsible theorizing. Fun, though.
But my stomach's starting to theorize irresponsibly about lunch.
How much further do you want to go, Lobsang?
Lobsang looked inland and raised a fancy pair of binoculars to his artificial eyes. In that direction, the sky was brightening, the lurid backdrop of stars and interstellar clouds becoming washed out. Sunrise approaching, maybe, Joshua thought.
Lobsang said, Just a little further. I think I see something at the summit of the next ridge.
That far, then, Maggie said. She led the way. Once again, Joshua gritted his teeth and followed. Indra walked at his side. And they crested a low bluff and stopped dead. Standing on the next ridge over, they saw a series of dark bands, slender, vertical, black against the lurid sky of this world. Monoliths.